Keep this frequency clear. Keep this frequency clear.
CJAM. Redefining radio in Windsor, Detroit. We are 99.1 FM.
Keep this frequency clear.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio Show on CJAM 99.1 FM. Thank you for everyone taking some time out of their day to tune in. My name is Marie.
And my name is Erin, and we're going to be your hosts for today on behalf of Pro Bono Students Canada. Hopefully you were able to catch Magna Carta's episode last Friday. That was by Natalie and Michael, and they were speaking about the Community Living Windsor Project, which was regarding substitute decision makers. So if you weren't able to catch it, you can give it a listen on CJAM's website at cjam.ca, and it's in the archives.
So before we begin, we just want to give a quick disclaimer, as always. So anything on this show is the opinion of those people only, so me and Erin, and does not reflect the opinions of CJAM as a radio station. And also Erin and I are students at the University of Windsor Faculty of Law, so we're not lawyers yet, and nothing we say should be construed as giving legal advice.
Now, Marie and I are also volunteers with Pro Bono Students Canada. I'm sure you've heard a little bit about the organization from our colleagues in other shows, but we'll give you the rundown again. So it is the first pro bono organization in Canada. So this show is just one of the many projects that PBSC helps to organize. And through our radio show, we help to feature the other projects that PBSC puts on. The organization helps to train future lawyers with practical experience while increasing access to justice and promoting pro bono work within the profession. So every project you hear about on this show is also done under the supervision of a lawyer. Today, we are going to be discussing the work that our pro bono volunteers are doing this year with the Yes Means Yes Curriculum Review Project.
So before we get more into that for today, we want to take a few minutes to talk about something that's very important to CJAM and to University of Windsor students in general, and that is the Ontario government's recent changes to tuition fees. So basically, these changes would make many mandatory student fees optional, and that is kind of a problem for CJAM because they would lose a lot of their primary source of funding. Right now, CJAM is doing everything that they can to have campus radio stations deemed as an essential service under the Student Choice Initiative so that they can continue getting this funding from students' tuitions. So if this matters to you at all, which I hope it does because you're listening, we ask that you help us in taking time to write, call, and make whatever noise you can. Because basically right now our main course of action is to contact the Office of the Premier and the Ministry of Training, Colleges and Universities by email and basically asking them directly for a response and also to CC your local MPP in that email.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's $5 that every student puts towards CJAM.
Only $5.
Every year. Mm-hmm. So that's really not much. That's like a Starbucks coffee or parking.
Exactly.
Like once.
Yeah.
So, and it really gives a great opportunity for volunteers like us or people who want to pursue a career in media.
Yeah. Or who just want their voice heard, you know, it's a great platform for that. And it's a shame that if every student is giving like $5 less, it's just like a such a big impact for the radio station. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it would be a shame to see that happen. So.
Yeah, and this is only the second year for our program, right, Magna mm-hmm. Carta. So it'd be sad to see it go away next year.
Yeah, I would love to. Very sad. Yeah, So
hopefully we
Figure things out. It's mm-hmm. looking okay. We're hearing positive things. So
yeah, there's a lot of work being done. Mm-hmm. So
for sure,
hopefully we can make that move forward. So to move on with our subject for this show, we will be interviewing two volunteers, Aspen and Faiza, and they have been working on projects with LEAF, which is the Legal Education and Action Fund for Women. Now, last semester, some of the pro bono student volunteers traveled to local high schools in Windsor and University of Windsor residences, and they delivered LEAF's Only Yes Means Yes workshop, which educates students on the crime of sexual assault and harassment, and also teaches them about the parameters of consent and the implications of sexting. Now, this semester, our two volunteers have been working again with LEAF to update the Only Yes Means Yes workshop and curriculum materials for future use.
So LEAF is an organization that was founded in 1985, basically to ensure that equality provisions in the charter, specifically sections 15 and 28, are being protected within Canadian courts. And so over the years, the organization has done just that, having various successes in furthering substantive equality for women and girls in Canada. A recent case that's certainly been highly discussed all over Canada, and especially here at Windsor Law, is the Barton case. And so LEAF actually intervened in this case. So first of all, just for viewer listeners who haven't heard about it, it's a case about a male named Bradley Barton who was found not guilty by a jury in the death of Cindy Gladue, who was an Indigenous woman who died after suffering severe injuries from a sexual encounter with Barton. And so there were various injustices that happened during the proceedings of this case. For example, Gladue was frequently referred to as Indigenous and a sex worker. And this was done without instructing the jury in a way that would safeguard them from potentially biasing or creating biases about Gladue. Mm-hmm. And she was also framed kind of as being instrumental in her death because of her position as a sex worker. It was kind of shown as something that she ought to have considered would be a possibility. And probably the most appalling thing that happened was the court actually admitted evidence of Gladue's vaginal tissue to be put on display for the court because they thought that there would be some kind of benefit in this for whatever reason, which is basically a major human rights violation.
I mean, like, yeah, it's really shocking, I think. When very I first shocking. Heard about that, yeah. It's like, who does that? I think that's unprecedented.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Completely unprecedented.
If you need to, bring a model or a diagram.
And I just don't understand, like, the purpose, really. Like,
yeah.
I guess they were trying to show, like, what caused her death, and, like, that was part of their analysis. But
yeah.
I feel like you could just say that, no? Like, yeah. I don't know.
Because, right, she died from wounds, like, with
inflicted.
In her vaginal tissue.
Yeah.
She bled to death.
Mm-hmm. So there was just debate over, like, what was it that caused that exactly, like, during their encounter. Mm-hmm. And I guess to further their arguments, they needed to show a diagram. But not a diagram. Her actual...
Mm-hmm.
Very sad. And then in contrast, there were no negative inferences drawn about the accused who was unlawfully paying for services from a sex worker. In fact, the Crown attorney actually warned the jury against making decisions based on the nature of taking these services from a sex worker. Whereas, like, none of these safeguards were offered for Gladue.
Mm-hmm.
And so on October 11th, 2018, LEAF, along with the Institute for the Advancement of Aboriginal Women, appeared before the Supreme Court to advocate for the rights of Cindy Gladue and all Indigenous women in general. And their argument was that the trial judge erred in admitting Gladue's sexual history and also did not properly instruct the jury on the law of consent in sexual assault cases.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the the fact that they didn't do this is what had a major impact on the trial proceedings. And so, yeah, that's definitely a very important case, and the intervening Leaf as an intervener definitely, like, spoke to a lot of important things that I feel like often courts have trouble raising themselves, like, mm-hmm. in that situation, the Crown attorney, like, they should have raised these concerns about the evidence or about the potential biases by the juries, but none of them were raised, and that's just a complete failure on the Canadian criminal justice system mm-hmm. in protecting visible minorities.
Yeah, and they kept referring to her, right, as, like, Aboriginal and mm-hmm. a prostitute. And yeah. if she hadn't been either of those, would they have brought up the fact that she was, like, I don't know, a salesperson? Like, is it really relevant?
Yeah, exactly.
In this case, or that she wasn't Aboriginal, would they bring up that she was white? Like, it doesn't seem mm-hmm. like it'd be relevant from that perspective. And mm-hmm. the legislation, the courts, like, they've come a long way in helping to ensure that when these decisions are being made about consent, that we aren't looking at someone's, like, past sexual history mm-hmm. to come to a conclusion that they must have consented today because they did yesterday or the day before.
Right.
Or looking at her as a sex worker, she must have consented because it's her job. Well, no, not necessarily. You can't make that.
It's kind of unimaginable.
You can't legally make that assumption.
Who would ever consent to something that could cause that much bodily harm that would lead to death?
Yeah.
Like, it's just not, I can't imagine that that's something she consented mm-hmm. to. So.
And yeah, in the submissions of Leaf, they were saying consent isn't just about saying yes to sex, you're also agreeing to, like, the amount of force.
Exactly.
So just because you paid someone and they agree to have sex with you doesn't mean you can, whatever happened here, mm-hmm. go, so, you know, like, must have been some sort of object. I'm not sure how they killed her, or he killed her, but mm-hmm. to that extent that she dies, it seems, I don't know how someone could consent.
Exactly.
Something like that.
And yeah, and that was the whole issue here. This was not a conversation that was had with the jury, like, the fact that consent only goes so far. Mm-hmm. And it just had a terrible outcome because he was acquitted at trial.
So hopefully our volunteers that we're interviewing today will have a bit more to say on sexual assault and consent. So we'll be right back after this brief ad, and we will have our interview with Aspen and Faiza.
Feeling lost, overtaxed, more than a little stressed? If you're a struggling student at the University of Windsor, here are some of the services available to you.
Students can check out the Student Counseling Center in the CAW Center's second floor. It's available free to all students with ongoing sessions available, no limit, as well as group therapy.
So, how do I find out more about these services?
You can check out the website, uwindsor.ca/scc, or call 519-253-3000, extension 4616. You can even stop by during the office hours, Monday through Friday, for a walk-in appointment, and now be seen same day or within 48 hours.
Don't let it get the best of you, folks. Get help. Get your stress down.
Welcome back, listeners. We're here with our two pro bono students, volunteers, Aspen and Faiza. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about what brought you to Windsor Law?
Hi, I'm Aspen. I'm a 2L here at Windsor Law. And I think what brought me here was I had heard great things about Windsor in general and the great community here at Windsor Law. And I'm so glad I came here after all, because everyone is so nice and there's such a great community feel. Yeah, not only just in the law school, but just in the community in general.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, I'm really happy about that. And what brought me to law school itself was I had done some graduate work prior to law school and realized that although it did interest me, it was a little too theoretical for me.
Can I ask what the graduate work was in?
Yeah, it was in history.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, and I specifically focused American history. Mm. Yeah, but yeah, I wanted to do something more practical on the ground, and I think law school's definitely given me this, and I'm looking forward to doing that more in my career and helping people in my community and sort of career in social justice and community activism.
Hi, I'm Faiza, and I'm also a 2L here at Windsor Law. And what brought me to law school, it sounds pretty cliche, but I've always wanted to go to law school since I was young. Like, I was part of this mock trial in grade 5. I led the mock trial. Yeah, it was the Louis Riel trial. I don't know if you guys heard of it. So since then, like, I actually come from a background of, like, medical practitioners, but, like, medicine was just not for me. And so I was always interested in the law and just, like, kind of giving people a voice. And so here I am. And I didn't get a chance to do any graduate work. That sounds really interesting. But I just came here straight out of undergrad. So I've just been hitting it through. You know.
Nice. I think law is cooler than medicine. I mean, yeah. I'm biased.
We're way
but,
cooler.
Yeah, we're a little bit
think
better.
So, too.
So a next question. Did either of you volunteer with PBSC before this, like last year? And what brought you to PBSC this year?
Yeah, so I started volunteering with PBSC last year as a only yes means yes, basically workshop leader, which was great because I got to lead sort of these workshops led by LEAF National in high schools, in the community, youth sort of shelters, as well as the university. So it was great because I had that opportunity to reach out to the Windsor community. Yeah, in terms of volunteering with pro bono in general, I think prior to law school, you always hear about the great work that pro bono does in general. Right. And I definitely wanted to be part of that going into law school. And I think doing these projects has definitely solidified for me the fact that I want to continue this as I become a lawyer in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like starting out doing pro bono work as a law student really helps you think ahead, like as a lawyer, maybe this is what something I want to do. And it's probably easier getting into it now as a student than, you know, later on. So I think it's good that we're all starting a bit early.
Yeah, you definitely see the value of it.
So I actually volunteered with pro bono last year as well. I was always interested in only yes means yes, but I was a little bit more interested in something like a project that we had last year. We didn't have it this year. It was with the Bulimia Anorexia Nervosa Association, and I did like basically like a health law curriculum review similar to this, but it was more like just situated around health. And what brought me to pro bono, I want to say that similar to Aspen, like I'd always heard about it and people's like initiatives with pro bono. And I do think that like once we get a like disclosure of it and stuff into in law, like to see like what it is in law school, that like once we do go into the field, it's like we're kind of like alumni. We're like, oh, we know what pro bono is. So it's like,
about.
Yeah. So it's like then you want to volunteer and you want to keep on like helping individuals. And yeah, that's why.
Awesome. So there's another part to this question I forgot to ask, but is there a special significance to you personally for this, the LEAF project, the curriculum review?
For me, I've always been interested in sort of women's rights. I've been a volunteer at Women's College Hospital in Toronto, where I see all the great work they do for women's healthcare. And so for me, this was just sort of a continuation of contributing as much as I can to sort of promoting women's equality rights.
That's great.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that, like, I come from the South Asian community, and over there there's, like, a really big kind of, like, sheltered aspect, and it's really patriarchal and stuff. So I think that I was always, like, someone who was trying to break out of that shell and, like, talk to people about, like, women's rights and stuff. So it has been an interest of mine, and this, like, directly correlates to that. So
okay. So your project also deals with criminal law in a few ways. Are either of you interested in pursuing a career in that field?
Yes.
She knows
what
she
wants. Yeah. Erin and I were actually in the same criminal law class last year.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. And we had an amazing, amazing professor, Elizabeth Brown, a Crown Attorney here in Windsor.
Yep.
Nice.
And
it was a good time. It was a late class, but it was worth it.
It was so worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved hearing about her firsthand experience in the courtroom. And yeah, it was great. I got to see her in court as well and see her in action. So yeah, no, she definitely inspired me to take criminal law because coming into law school, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. But now I think I definitely have a better idea. And yeah,
she's an amazing Crown Attorney because I actually volunteer with VVAP at the Ontario Court of Justice. So I actually work with victims of like sexual assault and domestic violence. And I go to the court like at least twice a week. And it's just so I think it's a rewarding experience because, like, in law, I think that we get, like, a little desensitized when we're just, like, reading all these cases mm-hmm. about people, like, these murder cases, these sexual assault cases, and we're like, okay, like, we read these cases, and we're like, okay, so the ratio we got out of this yeah. is that, like, you know, consent is this, and then we're like, don't forget on the crim exam to write this, right? But mm-hmm. then when we're in that practical, like, realm, and we're in the courtrooms and stuff, that's, like, when you understand, like, law and, like, justice and how it's, like, being served and why people deserve to have their justice being served. So, yeah. Sorry, what was the question that you answered?
Like, a career in criminal law.
Yeah,
does that
so,
interest
yes.
you?
Yes. I think that, like, it's really interesting. Oh, okay. I think before I was always, like, family law, and then I went into the criminal course, and I was just like, I don't know, like, I think I want to practice crim. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. I think if I can just add to that too, on one occasion when I got to see Liz Brown in the courtrooms, I got to speak to Justice Dean, and he sort of solidified for me the reason why I, as studying history, sort of liked criminal law, because in studying sort of human decision making and basically why people do the things they do is what I've studied in the past, and now I saw this in criminal law, mm-hmm. and it mm-hmm. just sort of made sense to me.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's cool you can make that connection between what you studied before and mm-hmm. and now, for sure. So our next questions are about the public legal education workshop. And so your curriculum review component is looking at this workshop to see what we can fix, what we can do better next time, right? So I just have a few questions about the workshop element. And I know, Aspen, that you did this last year. So I might ask you a few questions if that's okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so can you explain what the workshop is about, what kind of tasks involved, what you were doing last year?
Yeah, so the workshop is geared towards both high school and university students, so those age groups. And basically we want younger people to understand consent and how sort of what their rights are before the law in terms of consent. So what we want to get through, I think, primarily is that consent means different things to different people. So we start with this activity called hooking up, and we realize how many sort of different definitions people have about that. And yeah, so we just want to know, we want to make people aware of the fact that there are different ways of sexual sort of consent and what that means to different people, and it doesn't have to mean the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then also bringing in the law itself, mm-hmm. so decisions such as Ewan Chuck, things we learned in criminal law.
Oh yeah, and I remember Ewan Chuck for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how those relate to basically our rights before the law.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you would work with them and compare like their common understandings of consent versus the legal understanding, basically?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. Cool. And yeah.
So obviously this is kind of like a difficult topic to talk about mm-hmm. with young students. Can you speak to some of the strategies you would use to try and like make them more comfortable and more like an open discussion?
Yeah, I think we would sort of, if nobody was responding because they are shy sometimes mm-hmm. at the beginning, we would sort of yell out things and see how they responded to that. And then once we started saying it, yeah. then they felt a little bit more comfortable in mm-hmm. saying right. it. We also had scenarios of situations. So also basically we just read it out and then they had to respond in terms of how they would approach the problem. So that was a little bit easier. But it, also we used sort of, they could write things down instead of right. sort of saying them orally. So yeah, there are quite a few strategies to approach it. Yeah.
This is a follow-up, but were some students more receptive? Like, were they had an easier time talking about these difficult issues? And did you find a difference between the classrooms or the schools?
Yeah, I think in the high schools it was a little bit more difficult mm-hmm. because many times the teacher would stay in the room, and so they might feel a little bit intimidated. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. But here at the university, it went well. Okay. So. Yeah, it was a little easier in that sense. I think people were more free to talk about it.
Yeah. And I think university students are a bit more comfortable talking about difficult topics. Mm-hmm. At least like my undergrad, we focus a lot on mm-hmm. the social science area. So mm-hmm. we focus a lot on those difficult topics. Yeah. But
I feel like once you're like learning about it in school, it's easier to talk about. Like in high school, I don't think I ever had like someone come into the school and do any kind of presentation mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
So you just weren't like exposed to those ideas. Well, depending, like maybe some high schools will... the ones you went
to. It was a little tough too because mm-hmm. some students had already experienced some of the things we were talking about.
Right.
So with regards to sort of sexting and like it had already happened. So it was a little challenging sort of to address it as not just a hypothetical, but something that happens and has happened before.
For sure. Right. So can you expand a bit more on what kind of challenges you faced doing this workshop and also what you took away, what you learned from it?
Mm-hmm. One of the challenges, I think particularly in the high school setting, was that it was a little harder to connect with high school students. I think we think that we're all sort of on the same level in university, even as law students and with undergraduate students, for example. But in high schools, it's important to keep in mind that they are younger and they don't have as many experience as we do. And they're involved in social media, but maybe not as educated as we are. Mm-hmm. So there were some times where I think we might have gone a little too far. Didn't want to sort of overstep our boundaries, if that makes sense, with what they can do. Like, it's up to them, but yeah, just to make them aware of it, but not to sort of scare them at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was one of the challenges. But yeah, I learned a lot in terms of sort of leading the seminar itself. Mm-hmm. So just my own sort of skills, my own oral communication skills, and how do you present something for people to sort of stay with you and understand where you're getting with that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but also that I really enjoyed sort of reaching out to the community. I find that sometimes in law school we're sort of in our little bubble at school and we always see the same people.
Yeah.
But it was nice to sort of reach out to the community and see sort of some other perspectives as well.
Was there anything that surprised you or that you were shocked at during these workshops?
That's a good question.
Did you kind of just see it all coming?
I think some of the answers might have surprised me.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of what people thought the appropriate course of action was in some scenarios, in terms of sort of what happens if someone, let's say you've been sexting someone and now they're threatening to post the photos. It's obviously it's a hard sort of situation to be in, but you know, would you go to the police or would you not tell anybody or would you sort of take their phone away from them? And sometimes the responses were not exactly what you would think they would be necessarily. So I think that just reinforced why we need these seminars.
I was about to say, like, you're there for a reason, clearly.
Yeah.
Were the students, like, was the response to do nothing or was the response was too much? Like, what was...
Yeah, like I think just from my experience, I think some of the sort of male students didn't understand the severity of it as opposed to the female students who had maybe gone through it before and realized like, no, like this is something serious. It's not just something we sort of put aside and forget about it. So I think, sort of the male students understanding that, no, this isn't a laughing matter. Yeah. Like, this is important, and we're not just going to leave it aside.
Mm-hmm. And I guess sometimes, especially younger students, they laugh because they feel uncomfortable. But hopefully they do take it seriously, even if they aren't showing it, you know, outwards. Yeah. I'm sure they still took something from your presentation. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, like maybe they went home later and thought about it, and that'll change their reaction next time. So.
And that's the goal, you know, if we can get them to just think a little bit more about it and everybody else's experiences. I think
then
we've accomplished
did your job well done.
Something.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's switch our focus to the curriculum and review component. So you both worked on this was it this semester or for the whole year?
It was for the whole year.
Okay. So Faiza, if you could maybe address some of these questions. Can you explain a bit what the project was about and how it related to the workshop element that Aspen just talked about?
Okay. So the curriculum review, it was actually directly related to the workshop because we have basically a standard curriculum that we go through to teach like children or help children learn about the concept of consent. So the Only Yes Means Yes curriculum, what our main project was that just like anything that happens in law, like it changes, like as like, you know, the world goes on, like new things come into place and stuff, so everything changes. So we felt that the Only Yes Means Yes current curriculum is a little outdated, just like basic things, for example, like the scenarios, some of the scenarios,
like, for example, one scenario talked about how two teenagers were smoking weed and listening to Bob Marley.
Right, yeah. So then, like, if we go to a classroom and we're telling them that, they're like, no, weed is legal now. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, so you have to, like, change the scenarios, change things just as, like, laws changing. Every day, LEAF works towards, like, women's rights and women's education. Like, every day they try to change things about, like, how women are receiving education and their rights. And so there's just so many implementation that they had, like, in mind that there should be in the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Aspen's going to talk a little bit more about the bill that was passed. But in general, like, for us, it was that we were looking at the curriculum, and because we are law students and we are really, like, kept with these types of, like, cases and changes in, like, law and stuff, that we want to be able to implement some of those into the curriculum. And even things like the Me Too movement that happened, like just things that happen in social media and how we can incorporate it. Because when we're talking to a younger audience, we want to make things that, like, they would be relatable. Able to relate to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, we can't just go up there and be like telling them about the case law. Like, are we in check? Like, those were things that we learned when we were in law school. So it's like, when you're dealing with 14, 15, 16 year olds, you're like, they're not going to comprehend this type of thing. They want something that's, like, social media related, something easy to understand. So it was just, like, catering to the audience and changing it based on, like, changes in law and just to make it more, like, today's day and age, I guess, and just review it. That's the main project.
Just a follow-up, do you have different curriculum for the high school versus university classes, or is it the same questions?
It's the same curriculum. Okay. Like, Only Yes Means Yes is, like, one standard workshop. Yeah.
Okay, so it has to be relevant to both, like, university students and then the high school students. Yeah. Okay, so that can be a challenge a little bit on its own.
Just like what I mentioned before, really, with the high schools, that, you know, sometimes it's hard to sort of make it a little bit more simplified for them and then make it a little bit more complicated, I guess, for the university students.
I think that there are times where, like, if you were doing it for the university students and you show them some of the scenarios and they're like, are you serious? Like, like, you're at a house party and, like, you know, like, stuff like that. Like, some of the scenarios, I think, like, your question actually is, like, a really great question, because while we're doing our review, like, we might want to say that, can we have different scenarios for university students and different scenarios for high school students, because
a lot does change.
Yeah, it is a different, like, way of thinking. And
or just, like, mindset. Like scenarios, like you said. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not in the same scenarios in high school as you are in university.
Exactly,
so.
For sure.
Aspen, so how would you say your experience doing the workshops translated into this side of the project?
Yeah, it's definitely given me perspective into what is needed and what Faiza talked about, what the changes, what are the changes we can implement. Yeah, like, in terms of the sexting thing, there's been an article even recently in CBC this week about how teenagers are dealing with it, and through Snapchat and Instagram, and just trying to update the curriculum as much as we can for students today.
Yeah.
So that they can relate to it as much as they can, because, like Faiza said, like, if they can't relate to it, then we're not going to get the message through. And even if it's simple things like updating Facebook to Snapchat, because a lot of younger kids don't use Facebook anymore.
I don't think they have Facebook, or I don't think, but, like, even
their parents
Snapchat,
have Facebook.
Yeah. It was definitely not something when the curriculum was made that was in the people's minds that Snapchat is something that can relay, like, sexting. And most of the time, I'm sure Aspen has experienced that when you go to, like, these classrooms, that they actually don't know that it's sexting. Like, they're like, oh, no, that was just a snap, and it goes away. Like,
just
you know
a snap.
Yeah, like, they don't have that concept of, like, legal aspect of it.
Yeah, and just to let them know that they can say no. Like, if people ask them for these, like, you know, they don't have to go through with it.
Yeah.
Like, they're not required. It's not. You know, they're still young. Like,
it's just that at that time, like, when you're in high school and you want to be, like, part of, like, the in crowd, and you want to be, like, popular, I guess, that you don't realize that, like, when we think about these things, like, we look at it from a very different, like, legal lens because we've been exposed to, like, law and stuff and the precautions that we should take, but they're just young, and I think that the main aspect of it is education, because we're literally the people going in and educating them about this stuff, because it's, like, they don't know. They really don't know that it's harmful at all.
And with technology, everything is permanent, right? So even just a snap, Snapchat, whatever. Like, it could be there forever.
I know. So. And this came up too, right? Like, there's just so many ways of saving the photo. Like, someone can take a photo of somebody else's phone. So there's just so many things to address.
So can you explain a bit more what the challenges were for this part of the project, the curriculum review, anything you learned from it or further skills?
Right. So I think some of the challenges that we faced was mainly looking at the language, and because the thing with the Only Yes Means Yes curriculum is that they have tried to do it in the best way that they are educating people, but at the same time, they're like putting the points down. Like, you know, we want to put it in layman's terms because we're trying to help, like, high school students and stuff, but at the same time, you want the core language there, like, some things that they don't, like, they probably don't know the definitions of, and some, like, difficult language. So I think some of the challenges we faced was, like, trying to change the language so it is more, like, modernized to, like, what we would relate to and what high schoolers would relate to, but at the same time, it's still sticking with, like, the legal, like, the more important and, like, legal wording, I want to say, like, legal jargon, maybe.
Yeah.
Something that I learned was, I think in law school, I think as you mentioned earlier in the interview, like, we've sort of take the law as it is, right? We learn the decisions, we learn what's in the law right now, but how did it come to that? And, you know, how did the law change in the sense that it is what it is today? Yeah. So I think looking at Bill C-51 that was just granted royal assent in December, and how that added provisions to the criminal code, and now how can we take those provisions and implement them in the workshop, and how did that change the law in Canada? So I really like this sort of review of the law and how to change how we approach problems today, and I don't think we do that enough in law school, at least from my experience. So I guess also because of my history background, I always want to know how things sort of came to be. So I really enjoyed that part. And I feel like we should be doing it more in law school because we're just sort of taking the information as it comes. But we're not critically reflecting on it as much, maybe. Yeah.
It's hard to, I guess, contextualize it when you're just reading it on a page, right? And we don't see the actors in these suits or in these proceedings as people, and they obviously are people, but when you're just reading it, you have to take out the facts, the ratio,
make
the
a chart.
Issues. Yeah, it all becomes like routine.
Yeah.
So it's good to see the human element of it, I think, because that's the most important part, for
exactly.
sure. Especially when you're practicing, that's a very important part.
I just want to add that we also looked at many of the cases that were already in the Only Yes Means Yes workshop, and we were asked to kind of like mark up the cases and see like if any of the law has changed or if anything has been overturned. And I think that's another aspect that we learned, that like you think that something exists in law and that's not the final, like that's not your final ratio, that's not like what's going to happen, because we have interveners every day. We have like Leaf acts as interveners. I don't know if you guys saw that they were part of like RV Barton, very important case. But it's just that when we have public outcry for anything can change, like, you know what I mean? Like when the public is there and they support things and they know that this decision shouldn't have been the way it was, it was just really interesting to see that the law is like changing and molding, so nothing is like set
in stone.
Tree. Right? The living tree.
Hey, constitutional law over again.
We will never forget that.
Can you tell us about any specific updates that you guys are thinking of making to the workshop?
Yeah, so Aspen's going to talk about some of the majors. So there was a bill that was released, and it had all these like goals from LEAF that they wanted to be implemented into the bill. So we'll just talk a little bit.
That was the Bill 52 you mentioned?
C-51.
C-51, okay.
So before I talk about the bill, I'll just talk about one of the major largely our biggest goal in this entire like Only Yes Means Yes curriculum is like explaining to high schoolers and like undergrad stuff the concept of consent and when like consent is like viable and when it's not viable. So we had in the old curriculum that basically if you were under the influence of anything, like under the influence of alcohol, drugs, and whatever, and you like it just meant that you can't consent. Like even if you had just one like small drink or whatever, it just meant that if someone asked you, and it just meant you didn't have capacity at all. Mm-hmm. So we were like reading the curriculum, and when we had the chance to meet with our Laura supervisor from Leave, even she had like a lot of input on the fact that like their consent isn't just if you're intoxicated by like the smallest amount that mm-hmm. you can't consent anymore. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest changes was that the change to the definition of consent and when intoxication means that someone can't consent properly. And right. So I think it's like what we came to the conclusion with and what we're going to be adding to the manual is that if a person's intoxication means that they're no longer understanding, they can't consent. However, the major aspect is that they have an incapacity to consent. So mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a challenge trying to explain to students like what incapacity means, but it basically means that they have like this lack of consciousness. So they're unconscious and they... It's really hard to put it in words, but it's just that, like, not everything just because you're intoxicated means that you you can't consent.
Right. So do the students get, like, a handout or something with these? Or these are just, like, ideas that you mean you're going to talk to them about?
So when they do, like, the standard curriculum, it's, like, mm-hmm. one part of it, like, explaining okay. the capacity of consent.
And right. Really okay. Means. Like, how to approach that.
Yeah. Okay. It's a scenario, basically, where mm-hmm. there's... For example, two teenagers, and they're both intoxicated, and they start like hooking up, and then the question is, are they consenting? And before, the answer was that no, they're not, because they're both under the influence of alcohol. Mm-hmm. But that's what like, Faiza was explaining, that it's not that clear cut.
And that's kind of an issue then, if they're both not consenting, then are they both liable? Like,
yeah,
that's a bit confusing.
Yeah. But I think it's just important to see those signs in people. That's what we want to put out there, is if you see signs in other people that they are under the influence, not to take advantage of them mm-hmm. or right. try to do something that you think they wouldn't want to do otherwise.
So mm-hmm. So with this bill then, it's going to be incapacity that we're looking at for consent?
Its intent is to codify the decisions of the Supreme Court in both decisions of J.A. and Uinchuk.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. even though those decisions were out there, this bill is specifically putting those provisions in the criminal code.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that has received royal assent?
Yes, okay. It did in December of 2018. So
okay, perfect.
Very recent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because I don't think that, like, had we not been doing this project, like, we wouldn't be just looking up, like, oh, like, is there a bill that's looking at consent or mm-hmm. putting, like, RV urine checks? So it's, like, it tells us, like, how important this type of workshop is and stuff mm-hmm. because we need this type of education, and sometimes, like, we're not really looking into it until, like, we're asked to look into it. Yeah. So it's really important.
Yeah, like, I can read you some of the provisions that were clarified.
Yeah, sure.
For example, so the Senate added that the complainant is incapable of consenting to the activity in question for any reason, including the fact that they are unable to understand the nature, circumstances, risks, and consequences of the sexual activity in question. They are unable to understand that they have the choice to engage in sexual activity in question or not, and are unable to affirmatively express agreement to the sexual mm-hmm. activity in questions by words or by active conduct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it goes to their understanding. So it's not just if you had one drink. You can still understand. Right. It's on a spectrum, right?
Exactly. Okay. So it just sort of tries to clarify capacity.
Okay. Can you explain a bit more about the access to justice component of your project?
Yeah, so I think that there's definitely a huge access to justice component because while the Only Yes Means Yes workshop targets both like males and females, I think that women especially are part of like a vulnerable group that at a very young age, if they don't have that type of education, they're not going to realize when like they've been taken advantage of or when they've experienced something. And if they think that it's okay for them to talk about it and speak with others, especially when Aspen was talking about, like, people being threatened using their, like, Snapchat as sexting and stuff, and those, like, I guess kids, like, I know they're high schoolers and stuff, but they don't know that something wrong has happened and they can take, like, legal action for this, or they need to tell, like, an adult about it because they don't want to get in trouble at all. So I think with this educational aspect of Only Yes Means Yes, that it's, like, the main access to justice component is, like, education here, because I know that's LEAF's main mandate, because they use education as a component of providing people access to justice, because when they know about their rights, when they're, like, aware of what they can and cannot do, I think that's, like, one of the biggest aspects.
And with so much talk about this in the media today, it might be hard for younger students to sort of sift through it and really understand it, because in the workshop sometimes we would bring up the Me Too movement, and even though they had heard about it, they didn't really know the details. So, you know, so it's so important to sort of sift through it with them for them to understand it. And so once they understand it, like Faiza said, then they can seek help, because sometimes they think, like, no, that's just how things are, and might just continue with it. But if they know what to do and to seek out help from an adult, their friend or teacher, they're in a much better position to deal with it sort of up front and not let it snowball into something much worse.
And I think, like, we all know the hardest part can be seeking help, right? So even with the knowledge, just knowing that someone else can back you up, like someone's there to support you, that probably means, that would mean a lot, I would think, to these kids.
Because I feel like it's very normalized, like, things that are happening to, like, these kids, so they feel like help isn't for them, it's not.
And with all the peer pressure, right? Like,
you
might not want to, they might think it's normal. And if they don't do it, they're not going to fit in.
Do you guys have any other ideas of how we as a society can, things that we can do to make these conversations about sexual assault and harassment less taboo of a topic?
I think that with social media being something that younger age groups that cater towards a lot, I know that Snapchat actually has, like, a Discover page, and they have a lot of, like, knowledgeable things on that page. I think catering to an audience and making it, like, less of a taboo would be, like, having those, I guess, accessible to students in a way, and in the classrooms as well, like, promoting it through various forms of social media, I would say, like, through YouTube or something like Snapchat, because I know that, like, in today's day and age, because I have a younger sister, that, like, vlogging and stuff like that, like, on YouTube is so popular. So I think if, like, they see people who are, like, from their age group and stuff, and they're speaking about it and stuff, or if it's available on social media forums, like, we don't know. Like, right now we go into the classroom, so it's kind of like they have no choice but to listen to us, because it's but it's very formal as well. You're very good. But I think, like, when it's in an informal way, they're gonna think, oh, it's just, like, another thing, like, everyone must be, like, learning about it and stuff.
That's actually a great idea. Like, Snapchat, like, they do have some stuff that are, like, directed towards that, but doing more of that would definitely be helpful, because kids, that's what they do. They sit there on their phones and they flip through these things, right?
More of these workshops would be good to sort of get the conversation going, and then continue it in high schools, continue it, like, in the classroom, and also with parents talking to their kids about it. So I think just, like, the more we can sort of talk about it in a way that's not taboo, then people will be more comfortable sharing what happened to them and seek help if needed.
Sorry, I just want to add that I also think that many of the times when we're talking about, like, sex, and any time it comes up, it's always looked at as, like, don't engage in it, don't engage in it. So I think our curriculum is based on, like, yes, you're going to engage in it, but make sure, like, consent is there. So I think we already, like, move away from that taboo where when you have the sex talk with your child, it's always like, don't do anything, don't do anything bad, like, don't do this. But here it's like, if you're going to do something, make sure that you've gotten both sides of consent, whoever it is, whoever is, like, participating in it, that everyone's consent matters, and it's a very important fact.
And that it's not clear cut, right, as we've seen. But even though it's not clear cut, you know, we still have to have these warnings and understand where it is allowed and where it's not. So
Yeah, I think that the message is definitely best delivered without shame, for sure.
Oh, mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Do you have any recommendations for our listeners who might want to learn more about these topics?
I think they could encourage them to look up LEAF and what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, and how they are interveners in different cases and mm-hmm. what impact they have.
I think it was called the West Coast LEAF, Only Yes Means Yes. That one actually has the entire document online for, like, our curriculum. But also, just in general, like, LEAF has a lot of educative means for, I think, any age group. It's, like, applicable to anyone. So if you would just, like, access the LEAF's website and look at their, like, education, like, things, then they're very approachable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just sort of keep up with it in the media mm-hmm. and see how people are talking about it. And I think for younger kids, I would say, I've seen articles in CBC Kids specifically that try to deal with these issues at the more like elementary high school level. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that, like, in terms of their family, that parents are always the ones to, like, talk and educate students about it, because they think that, oh, they probably learned it in high school and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I think that I think children would feel actually more comfortable if they're able to go and access things online and look at it themselves and understand it, rather than having, like, a parental figure, like, kind of impose it on them
right.
or tell them, like, this is the right way and this is the only way. Mm-hmm. So
Is there anything you two would like to add, anything we didn't cover? Or did we cover pretty much
I think
every
you guys
topic?
Covered a
yeah.
lot. Yeah.
So
yeah, it felt really great to talk about, because, like, we've been doing this research behind the scenes, but mm-hmm. it was just like, it's not that we second guess ourselves, but we're like, are we doing this right? Like, is this mm-hmm. good? But it's like when you guys asked us and, like, probed us and
yeah.
stuff, that, like,
confirmed.
Yeah, we like,
know
confirmed,
more
like we know what
yeah.
we're
awesome.
Talking about, and, like, we've learned a lot through this whole
aspect.
Yeah,
we definitely learned a lot too.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for coming.
Yeah, no problem.
Yes, it was
thank you very insightful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So stay tuned, everyone. We're going to be right back after this short message.
The Sexual Wellness and Consent Committee wants to teach you how to be an ally. Listen, be open to learning from the experience of others. Believe, support survivors and those affected by violence. Speak out. Add your voice to call out violence. Intervene. Find a safe way to help when you see acts of gender-based violence. Act. Give your time to organizations working to end violence and be the change you want to see. A message from the Sexual Wellness and Consent Committee at the University of Windsor.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you again to Aspen Faiza for spending some time with us to give us more insight into their project this year with Pro Bono. We want to talk about another issue that I think is quite relevant today, and it becomes more relevant as time goes on, it seems, and technology keeps developing, and that is sexting and revenge porn. So there was relatively recently a bill passed, and it criminalized the publication of an intimate image without consent. I'm not sure how many people know about that, but, like, it is a criminal offense. It's section 162.1 of the criminal code. So basically it says that everyone who knowingly publishes, distributes, transmits, sells, makes available, or advertises an intimate image of a person knowing that the person did not consent to that conduct, or being reckless as to whether they did consent, is guilty of either an indictable offense or an offense punishable on summary conviction. So it could be lead to imprisonment of up to not more than 5 years. And the act does allow the court to give other punishments, such as restricting internet use if someone is found guilty of this. And although I think people colloquially use the term revenge porn, obviously what is covered in the criminal code is beyond that. So it's obviously not just in situations of revenge. It's whenever someone's distributing intimate pictures of another person without their consent. And I think it's really good that this has become an offense, because at least in
the civil law in Ontario, I really couldn't find much protecting people from situations like this where their images could have been distributed. So like maybe they gave an image to a boyfriend, girlfriend, mm-hmm. intimate partner, and that person decided to spread it, however, for whatever reason, without their consent.
Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely because of like the technological aspect. Like in the past, if a photo was kept, like it would be a lot harder to circulate it via mail or
So
I guess
by horse courier or something.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's like as we talked about with our volunteers, everything is just like at your fingertips, and like in a minute, like as soon as you send it, it's saved. As soon as you click a button, it can be sent to 50 other people. So we're definitely we're in need of that protection now more than ever, for sure, for individuals who are victims of these incidents.
Mm-hmm. People might think, oh, like she or he sent this image to me, it's mine now, I can do with it what I want. But that's not how it works, because the prohibition applies where the person like sent it to you or sent it to, you know, their significant other or whoever, with an understanding that it wasn't to be shared. So mm-hmm. if they send it and they're like, oh, just spread it to everyone, mm-hmm. then obviously it won't be an offense. But like in most cases, that's not the situation.
Oh, so if you say that, oh, you can send it to whoever, then it wouldn't be an offense?
It doesn't seem to be under the code.
But again, that's like, I guess it's hard to pin down. So either way, if you're like trying to protect yourself, like don't send the image around, because that person could then say, like, take that consent away and like say, oh, I never said that. But also usually like someone is not going to say that.
Yeah.
In most of these cases that are going to court, like the individual like suffered some kind of harm. They're not usually lying, I wouldn't think so.
I don't know. I hope not. I mean, like people who want to send, you know, intimate pictures of themselves, like they should be able to be protected and feel like if I send it to, you know, my significant other, I don't have to worry about them sending without my consent. And so that's what the criminal code.
Right. That's what it's trying to protect.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were a couple of recent cases, and it's all very new law in Ontario, and so nothing's really set in stone, but there was one case in 2016, Jane Doe and NC, and the court did recognize a new tort where there was a publication of an embarrassing fact, and in that case, it was the posting an intimate video that was sent. It was posted online, and by the time it was taken down, it had already been downloaded so many times that mm-hmm. once it's online, right, you can't really get rid of it. So in that case, there was a default judgment because the defendant never showed up for the trial. So So that case, Wolf. So it didn't stand because there was a motion to set it aside because he hadn't shown up. So maybe they're going to retry. I'm not sure, but I don't think there has been any word from that. But there was an even more recent case, Jane Doe and NM. And that was 2018.
Sorry, just to interrupt. Yeah. For listeners who don't know, Jane Doe is like referring to, it's probably like an underage individual, right? That's why they're trying to protect them?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I have to look at the facts. Or at least they didn't want their identity.
They're using the Jane Doe name to like conceal their identity.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why you're hearing Jane Doe.
Yeah. But there was a more recent case in 2018, Jane Doe and NM. And the court did recognize a tort of public disclosure of private facts. So similar situation with posting images without consent mm-hmm. from, I think it was an ex-boyfriend. So it's still too early to say, as it was a 2018 case. Maybe it could be appealed, but it's possible the courts will continue to find that someone could be civilly liable for posting or spreading images without someone's consent. So I want to end on an inspirational quote, as we normally do. I think this is a little bit relevant to what we talked about today, and it's by Maya Angelou. You may know her. She said that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel.
So beautiful.
I think it speaks to having respect for other people, you know, actually mm-hmm. caring and considering what they think and their feelings, and not crossing boundaries, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it speaks to consent a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's mm-hmm. very fitting for our topic.
Yeah, today. For sure.
So thank you everyone for tuning in. You can listen to CJAM 99.1 anywhere and anytime by going to cjam.ca or follow them on social media. So this is Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio. Catch us next week, Friday from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. My name is Marie. It was a pleasure today with you all.
And I'm Erin. Have a great rest of your day.
See, you might want to stay for your meal. I'll say it's gonna put some love in your life. Don't you really want to know how it feels? Everybody want to see what it's like. We even want to be inside. It ain't last. We all know there's better things in this life.